Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. This is Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. And I am joined by my co-host, the illustrious, the gallant, the all-round good guy, Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, how you doing, brother?
You know, Ed, I am doing great. I have been, you called me gallant, I have been gallivanting around the country, and I'm glad to be back with you and glad to be back on the program.
Well, where have you been? What you've been teaching the Bible?
Well, since the 1st of July, I have been in New Hampshire and Maine and New York and Wisconsin and Oregon and California, and we just got back at midnight last night from Chicago. So I am I may be a little blurry-eyed, but I am very glad to be back home here in Dallas.
Well, Ray, we've got a great show. We've got in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking about MediShare with Michael Gardner. At the bottom of the hour, or next segment, I'm really kind of looking forward to this, Daniel Ruddy will be with us, and we're going to be talking about Theodore Roosevelt. You know, one of these kinds of, always struck me as a man's man, but we're going to be talking about a book that he wrote. I always kind of thought of him as being conservative, and then as I read about the progressive movement and things like that, I thought, well, maybe he was a progressive guy. Daniel Ruddy's going to kind of straighten us out. You know much about Theodore Roosevelt?
Well, you know, in just getting ready for this, I've learned a great deal, because I think Daniel Ruddy's going to tell us that Teddy Roosevelt has gotten a bit of a bad rap in recent years, and that he's really more conservative than we've been led to believe. So this is going to be a really fascinating interview at the bottom of the hour. So stay tuned, folks.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And then next hour, Alex McFarland, our very own, we claim Alex, and rightfully so. He's going to be on with me talking about the social gospel and a few other things that are frequently on the minds of Christians. So now, before we do that, Ray, let me ask you, I had sent you something here just before the show in terms of Target. Now, this is a lot of our folks, hopefully all of our folks know, our listeners, that American Family Association began a boycott of Target, the retailer, back in April after the company announced, well, really began publicizing its policy of allowing men in women's restrooms and changing areas, and vice versa. But our, you know, major concern, of course, is with men in those areas. And we have been warning that that policy, which was intended to make transgendered customers and employees feel at home, we have no problem with that. Our suggestion was that they add a single-user, gender-neutral bathroom. A lot of stores have that. They have what's called a family restroom, where dads can take daughters in and moms can take little boys in, and they can just, you know, be there to help their little ones use the facilities. And so that was our recommendation for that. But we wanted them to keep the gender separate restrooms and changing areas the way they have always been for, you know, hundreds of years. Men go to the men's room and women to their own. Our warning was that this policy was not only misguided, because it makes people feel, we think, most people, uncomfortable being with strangers of the opposite sex while they're, you know, in an intimate setting. We also thought it might be dangerous, because it would remove an obstacle for sexual predators and voyeurs. And when these incidents, like I'm about to relate, and Ray, want to get your comments on it, when these kinds of incidents happen, we've been letting our listeners know. But here last week, a Target shopper was shaken. This is from an NBCDFW.com story, local affiliate of NBC. It says Dallas police and Target security are investigating a suspected peeping Tom who allegedly used a cell phone to look at an unsuspecting customer as she tried on clothes in the dressing room. Now, Ray, it's not hard to have imagined this happening ahead of time. Target has pretended that, I guess, human nature isn't fallen and these things wouldn't happen, but this was the reason, the main reason behind the boycott. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, number one, we're not surprised at all. This is what we said. This is one of the reasons we went on the boycott, because we knew this would happen, that there would be people who would, who, you know, whatever the motivations Target had for their policy, basically they were saying you can now go into any restroom you want to go. A man can go into a woman's restroom under whatever pretense, and it happened here in Dallas. And it happens that this particular Target store is the one that's closest to me pre-boycott. I shopped at this particular Target store. I mean, it's in a nice part of Dallas. It's a nice store. And I, like I say, pre-boycott, I had been there. So here's a case where a man went into a woman's restroom. She was changing clothes, undressing, and which is what a dressing room is for. He put his cell phone, you know, under the partition there, was taking pictures, and she called him out. He ran away. They got it on the, you know, on the surveillance video. I don't think, evidently, they haven't captured the guy yet, but she says at the end of the story, I thought this was most interesting, she said that I don't think I'll be shopping for clothing at Target anytime soon, comma, probably ever. We warned Target this is exactly what would happen. And Ed, you know, as you've said and we've said many times, this is not a warning about our friends in the transgender community. This is a warning about predators and peeping Toms who, under the guise of this very broad policy, were going to come in and do something like this. I think women and children need to be protected. And that's why we are calling on Target, why the boycott is still in place, because we are calling on Target to rescind this policy, which frankly endangers women and children in every Target store across America.
Yeah, Ray, exactly. I mean, we made it very clear from the outset. I know this for a fact because I wrote the initial press release for this and made sure this was high up in the press release. We do not consider transgendered people to be the threat. What we're arguing with Target about, what we're trying to persuade Target about, is exactly as you said, the policy is poorly written. It is overly broad. And in their effort to help the very, very small fraction of people in this country who consider themselves transgender, they are opening the door almost literally for predators and voyeurs. And the reason we say that is because, you know, the way most retailers have used these facilities in the past, men go to the gender-specific, you know, facilities, women do, and there's an initial roadblock to sexual predators. So if you see a man going into a lady's restroom, store personnel would say, "Excuse me, sir, you're going in the wrong restroom," and they can be directed to the men's room. If you have now instituted a policy like Target has, where no one's going to be stopped no matter where you go. Men don't have to dress as women to go to the women's restroom. They can go as this gentleman did, this pervert. He looked like a man. He was dressed like a man, but he went to the women's changing areas. Target has removed one obstacle to this happening, and that's why we say this policy is misguided and, frankly, dangerous.
Well, Ed, not only all that you said is true, but we just want to say there's 1.4, almost 1.5 million people who have signed the petition. And here's a woman, and it's in the, you know, it's on the internet. She's got the quote, "I don't think I'll be shopping for clothing at Target anytime soon, probably ever." I can't believe that Target likes this kind of negative publicity. They could get rid of this, or at least alleviate a lot of this problem, if they would go back and rewrite that policy and make it common sense, where men go to the men's restroom, women go to the women. As you said earlier, that's the way it's been. in civilization for hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah, and the question is why? Why would civilizations, why would retailers, I mean, as long as we've had retail stores, why would retailers have had separate restroom facilities in the past? Well, it is because they, at least for a long time, understood human nature, understood that we have a fallen nature, and some people will try to take advantage of people in a vulnerable situation. And so we had separate facilities. And, you know, we're not being unreasonable, Ray. I don't think we are. We are the ones who suggested, and of course, Target a month ago publicized the fact that they were spending $20 million to put these single occupancy, gender neutral bathrooms in all of their stores. Well, that's great. We suggested that at the very beginning. You know, for the very, very small percentage of people in this country, and it's, I think, 0.3%, so it's a third of a percent, who identify as transgender. For that smaller percentage of the country, and the tiny fraction of that that might be in a Target store at any given time, and while they're in that store need to use the restrooms, then they would have a bathroom all to themselves, or anybody could use that gender-neutral bathroom. But we are asking that Target go back to its earlier policy to protect women and children, and I don't think that's that is an unreasonable policy. Here is what Target said in the wake of this latest, and we continue to keep a list of these kinds of incidents at the Boycott Target webpage. I'll give more information about that in a moment. But in the wake of this that happened in Dallas, Target's corporate office released a statement, and this is what Target said. At Target, our guests are at the center of everything we do, and our commitment to creating a safe and secure shopping environment in our stores is unwavering. As a part of this commitment to safety, we have robust procedures, policies, and trainings in place to ensure that our stores are safe places to shop and work. And I just say baloney. Okay, this is my take on this. The guests are not at the center of everything Target does, or Target would honor the wishes of 1.4, as you said, Ray, almost 1.5 million people who are boycotting. We estimate, or we guess, that the numbers of people who do not like this policy far exceeds that 1.5 million. But if those people are at the center of everything Target does, then give them what they want, which is gender-specific facilities. And there are no robust procedures, policies, or trainings in place if you just let anybody use whatever bathroom they want. So, folks, we are encouraging you to go to AFA.net. The simplest way to get to the boycott page is to go to AFA.net, and at the top you'll see a little banner that has the click-through for the Target boycott. Go there. Please sign the petition. We want to try to make it to 2 million names by the end of this year. We've got the Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Christmas shopping seasons coming up. We hope to really put the pressure on Target. So please go and sign there. You can see on the bottom of the page other incidents where this has happened. Let's build those numbers so that Target hears our concerns loudly and clearly. Anything you want to add to that, Ray, before we move on? Or
well, just to say that it's a point we've raised over and over again. We're not against Target as a company. We're not trying to drive them out of business. We're asking them in the loudest possible way that we can to change their policies to protect women and children. And isn't it fair to say, if they will go back to their former policy, which did that, we'll happily end the boycott. This will be over. But until they do, the boycott remains.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to move to our first guest. Michael Gardner is on the phone with us. He's Director of Marketing and Communication for Christian Care Ministry. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Well, Michael, let our listeners know a little bit about this. This represents, your ministry represents a fundamental shift in this country. In terms of the way that Christians, or anybody really, can get health care, why don't you kind of give a little bit of an explanation of what your group does?
Absolutely, sure. Well, you know, the Affordable Care Act created lots of different ways that people can solve their health care needs. And so one of those possible solutions is called a healthcare sharing ministry. And that's what MediShare, our program, offers for folks. So we try to make it really clear to people that it is not insurance in any way. It's an alternative to insurance. And really what we do is we enable direct member-to-member sharing of healthcare burdens. So our members know in any given month with whom they're sharing. We obviously don't release health information, so you don't know exactly why you're sharing, but you do know with whom you're sharing each month, and you can reach out to those folks. You know, we create a way, community, and a way for our members to interact with one another so they can pray for each other, share notes of encouragement, and that kind of thing. So it really truly is a community of believers with a shared set of beliefs that come together to share each other's burdens.
Oh, well, Michael, tell us something about how MediShare actually works. If there's somebody out there who, they just heard what you said, and they go, you know, that's interesting to me. So how does it work, and what's the process that a person goes through if they're interested in investigating and maybe signing up?
Sure. I'll give you some contact information then in a second. But, you know, we would invite people to check us out on the website. It is a different concept for a lot of people. You know, it's sort of a foreign concept because so many people are familiar with insurance. But maybe I'll explain a little bit about the way that it works if you have a healthcare need, because that's really what most people are concerned with. So, you know, in the event that you have, that you're a member and you have a healthcare need, you go to your provider. It could be a primary care physician, a specialist, to the hospital, the emergency department, and you show a member card, you pay a provider fee up front, and then you get your health care. And what happens is the bills then come into MediShare, to our ministry, and really what we do is facilitate the member-to-member sharing of those bills. So, you know, for a large medical need, a group of members may contribute, you know, 20, 30 different people may contribute to a need, maybe even more than that, to help meet that other member's burden. And so we take care of the processing of those bills once they come in, and simply facilitate that member-to-member sharing. So it's not at all like an insurance program. So the funds are not pooled together. They sit in each member's individual account, and then when a need arises, they're shared from one another. So it's pretty straightforward from that standpoint.
We're talking with Michael Gardner with MediShare. Michael, let me ask you this. If I'm out there listening, now I'm familiar with these kinds of ministries and this approach, but if there are people sitting out there and they're going, "Now wait a second, you think you're saying I need to rely on some person I don't know to send me a check when I have medical needs? How can I trust them?" What would you say to somebody?
Right. Well, you know, the one thing that we need to make sure that people understand is that we aren't insurance and there aren't any guarantees, but God has been faithful and our members have been faithful in sharing each other's burdens. So, you know, all of the eligible member needs that have been submitted since 1993 have been shared in. So our members are very faithful in their sharing, and I think that community aspect is really what people are interested in. You know, I think a lot of times people hear that this is an affordable alternative, a biblical affordable alternative to insurance, and they'll check it out because that affordable piece piques their interest. But while people certainly do benefit from that, you know, the average cost is about half of what people can experience with insurance. You know, that's certainly something that interests people. But I think what we really hear about from our members is the community. You know, the fact that people are prayed for and prayed with. Members share, you know, praise reports over healing and other resolutions in their life. And so that's really important to our membership. We also hear from people that the fact that they're able to save on their healthcare costs enables them to go do more kingdom work. So they can increase their giving at their church. They can launch a ministry. They can sponsor a child. And so that's really the exciting thing about the program, is that we're helping people to impact the kingdom in that sense.
Michael, better give the contact information, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who want to investigate this. Tell us where to go and what's the first step to take in looking at MediShare.
Absolutely. We would welcome anybody to give us a call, and we can have you talk to a representative here. The best number to call is 1-800-PSALM-23. That's 1-800-772-5623. And certainly someone can kind of walk you through the details over the phone. A lot of people like to do research online as well, and so I would invite them to go to our website, which is www.mychristiancare.org. And there's lots of information there. They can see stories from other members who have had needs shared in. They can check out Prayer Stream, which is our prayer community as well, and generally get answers to most of their frequent questions about it. But certainly, if people, it's a different concept for a lot of folks, and so we would certainly welcome to give us a call and explore it a little bit more.
Well, Michael, last question. I didn't realize that you guys had been doing this since 1993. That's a pretty good track record for a ministry like yours.
Mm-hmm. It is definitely, and you know, there's a lot more interest now because of some of the changes in the way the healthcare system is working, and so we've definitely seen a lot more people interested in it. We have just over 200,000 members as of August, and so those members are all across the United States, and you know, the other healthcare sharing ministries are, I think, seeing the same interest too, because it is an affordable, biblical, penalty-free solution for people's healthcare needs, and so I think that's another thing that members really value, the fact that they're in compliance with the healthcare law if they're a member of a healthcare sharing ministry.
Michael Gardner has been our guest, and Michael, before we let you go, give those give that contact information one more time.
Absolutely. Our phone number is 1-800-PSALM-23-772-5623, and our website is mychristiancare.org.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being our guest, and continue to do the good work, the fine work that you guys are doing.
Thank you so much, and have a great day.
All right, you too. Michael Gardner with Christian Care Ministry, and these kinds of ministries are legal and are a viable alternative to traditional insurance. Ray, before we make a break here, take a break, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Keep Believing Ministries, your website, what people can find there, and let them know what sorts of information is available.
You know, if people come to keepbelieving.com, they will find a wealth of free online biblical resources, sermons, Bible studies, FAQs, videos, podcasts, all of it free. We provide these resources online as a way of helping the Christian church, not just here in America, Ed, but around the world. I heard just in the last 24 hours from a pastor in Pakistan, one of the most difficult places in the world to be a Christian, has a thriving ministry in that country, which is overwhelmingly Muslim, and Christians are persecuted there. He comes all the time to the Keep Believing website for free biblical resources, and that's kind of at the heart of what we do. So we just want to invite our listeners, come see us on the internet at keepbelieving.com. If anything we've got is useful to you as a pastor, Sunday school teacher, Christian leader, small group leader, just take it and use it. We're all in this together for the glory of God, and glad to share whatever God has given us with you.
Amen. KeepBelieving.com. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week with my co-host Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. We're going to take a short break, folks. When we come back, I'm going to tell you how you can get your listener story as we approach Share-a-thon in October, how you can get on the air to encouraging other people about American Family Radio. Then we're going to be talking about Theodore Roosevelt, our 26th president. Next hour, we'll be talking with our own Alex McFarland. Hillary Clinton made mention of her affinity for the social gospel. What is that? Is that a true gospel? We'll try to unpack that and some other things with Alex McFarland. You're listening to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Jan Markell of Olive Tree Views about the news of the day.
He backed the Muslim Brotherhood. He gave them $1.5 billion in aid, blatant terrorist outfit, and worst of all, he turned against Israel.
We'll also talk with Colin S. Smith, author of The 10 Greatest Struggles of Your Life. That's on the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, my fellow deplorables. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. The Diocese of Camden, New Jersey has a message for high school football players. Either respect the national anthem or be prepared to ride the bench. The Catholics are doing what the National Football League refuses to do, demanding that players stand for the Star-Spangled Banner. In recent days, many professional football players have disgraced the national anthem by staging political protest. School Superintendent Mary Boyle says they want to teach students about respect and honor for God and country. For Catholic high school football players, that means helmets under the left arm, standing straight, chest out, eyes ahead. Failure to comply means a 2-game suspension, and further disobedience gets a kid kicked off the team. The Catholics don't mess around, folks. You know, maybe they ought to send a delegation of nuns to the next San Francisco 49ers game, armed with rulers. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week with Ray Pritchard, my co-host of Keep Believing Ministries. Folks, I mentioned before the break that we have a Share-a-thon coming up. That's October 18th through the 20th. And what we do in advance of our Share-a-thons is we encourage our listeners to call in. I'll give you a number in just a moment. To call in and to tell us. We record these, in other words, and we play them in the lead-up to Share-a-thon and during Share-a-thon. Tell us how God has used American Family Radio in your life. Maybe we've inspired you to become more engaged in the culture or the culture war. How is your life different because of American Family Radio? Have we impacted your home or your workplace? Do you have a story of how God used AFR in your life in an exceptional way? And we play, I think we probably wind up playing most of these. We have our team clean them up a little bit, so don't get too long-winded. They'll have to edit those down. But we do encourage you to call. It is such an encouragement to other people to hear how American Family Radio has helped their brothers and sisters. Sometimes it helps people come to know the Lord, and the reason that is an encouragement is because they find out, they discover that the gift that they gave last Share-a-thon made a difference over the last 6 months in somebody else's life. So if you'd like to call and share your story, here's the number to do that, 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893. And you'll hear a recording, but it'll walk you through the steps, and you can leave your listener story. Ray, you know, Christian radio, when I first came to American Family Association over almost 21 years ago, you know, you just don't realize, I didn't realize the power of radio. A lot of people were talking about radio is on the way out. We had all these newfangled things at the time, you know, the internet and, you know, and all that. And but Christian radio still has a critical place in the messaging of the gospel.
Well, in a way, some of these newfangled things you're talking about, like the internet and like cell phones and so on, I mean, now AFR goes around the world.
Right.
So we've got our 196, 197 stations, whatever it is. But now through the internet, we can reach the whole planet. So far from being outdated and antiquated, I think technology has made AFR more cutting edge than ever before. And I want to just second everything Ed said. I hope many of you will call in with your stories, because there's never been, at least in my judgment, Ed, I can't think of a better day than today, and I can't think of a more needed ministry in the great cultural confusion, cultural uncertainty that we are in here in America. I can't think of a better time than to get behind the ministry of American Family Radio than right now. So folks, do call in, tell us your story. It'll be an encouragement to millions of people in America and around the world.
877-876-8893 is the number to call if you want to call in and share your story. You won't be live on the air, so you will just be basically being recorded. You'll get a walkthrough and some prompts. 877-876-8893. And as Ray was sharing, folks, if you've got a smartphone or you have a tablet of some sort and you want to listen to American Family Radio, you don't live in an area where there's a terrestrial radio station for American Family Radio from the network, you can listen anywhere you get a, you know, Wi-Fi signal. And all you do is just go to the App Store. You can download the American Family Radio app, and you can listen anywhere you want. You can listen to Ray and I anytime you want, really, and the other fine programming that the other fine programming that we have on the network. You can also go to American Family Radio, AFR.net, and download podcasts. If you want to hear Ray and I, you want to hear this show over and over and over again, you might need some psychiatric help. But if you wanted to do that,
but if you wanted to do it,
you wanted to do it, you could. So anyway, that's in preparation for our next Share-a-thon, which is October 18th through the 20th. Ray, before our guest comes on, we're going to be talking about Theodore Roosevelt in just a few minutes. Let me just ask you your thoughts. I know you live in the Dallas area. I think we've talked football before. What do you think about all this with Colin Kaepernick and the protests that aren't real numerous but do seem to be spreading a little bit, protesting the national anthem?
Well, number one, we're all agreed that in America you have the right to stand or sit when the national anthem is played. I mean, that's part of the First Amendment.
Right.
So no one is going to say that's illegal to do that. However, a man like Colin Kaepernick, I mean, he's paid an enormous sum of money to play football. I mean, he's second string right now.
Yeah.
But it's a sign, in my judgment, even if his cause is just, even if the things he wants to call to our attention need to be talked about, and I'm sure some of those things are good causes, is this the right way to do it, to do something that in the minds of tens of millions of Americans is basically disrespecting the flag and disrespecting the national anthem and disrespecting the very foundation of our country? My question to Colin Kaepernick is not, I don't question his motivation or his sincerity or the legitimacy of his protest, but I just want to say to him, my friend, is this really the best way to do it? I think you have brought disrepute upon yourself and actually haven't helped advance the cause you say that you're concerned about. Ed, I think there's got to be a better way to do it than to make a gesture that is widely regarded by millions of people as essentially disrespectful of the flag of this nation.
Well, I agree with you. And now we are calling, by we, I mean American Family Association, we are calling on the NFL to institute policies, because right now they have no policy regarding the national anthem. I suppose they thought they never needed to, but you know, it is certainly Colin Kaepernick's First Amendment right to protest peacefully without any recompense from the government. However, the NFL is not the government. The NFL is Colin Kaepernick's employer, and they have all sorts of stringent rules for behavior before and after games. And so we are calling on the NFL to institute a policy, and we just simply think all players who wear uniforms in the NFL should stand for the national anthem. They don't have to put their hand over their heart or sing, but they do need to show at least a little bit of respect for the nation. But your question, I think, is spot on, because the question to Colin Kaepernick and others is, because Kaepernick has said, I'm gonna refuse to stand for the national anthem until there are significant changes. Well, what does that mean? What is the end game here? At what point will Colin Kaepernick, you know, say the nation is a just nation, and now I'll start standing for the national anthem? I there's no answer to that. And so what you have is a continual thumb in the eye, I think, for a lot of Americans, many of whom have people in the military who are serving, who have lost loved ones. This protest is directed to the police force throughout the nation, just kind of a blanket condemnation of the police. It's an insult to them. And so I'm not sure at what point, Ray, Kaepernick can even back out of this if he wanted to.
Well, and besides all that, which is so true, the NFL has been completely hypocritical. The Dallas Cowboys wanted to wear an insignia of some kind that showed their support for the police. You know, just 2 months ago here in Dallas, we had this maniac who started shooting, who killed 5 Dallas police officers and wounded 9 others, shocked and saddened our city. And I don't think we've completely recovered. And the Cowboys wanted to do something to show a sign of support for the police in Dallas and across America. The NFL said, no, I don't get it. I don't get this at all. Why is it okay for Colin Kaepernick to sit during the national anthem, but it's not okay for the Cowboys to honor police in Dallas and across America? It seems like the NFL's values here are being turned upside down.
And it also seems like the NFL, by its inaction, is taking sides,
yes,
in a very contentious political public issue. So, you know, we're going to continue to examine this, because the NFL season just started this weekend. And I might even ask Alex what he thinks about this when we have him on next hour. But this is an issue that's not going away, because, you know, it's also spreading a little bit to college and to a handful of high schools. So I expect that this is going to grow, and we'll be talking about this for a while. So, folks, you will be party to our conversations about what is happening, just like maybe many of you are talking about it around the water cooler or with neighbors over the fence post or just with family as the holidays approach, Thanksgiving, so on and so forth. People will be talking about this as well. All right, we want to go to our next guest. Daniel Ruddy is our guest. He's author of the book Theodore the Great, Conservative Crusader. And it is a book about the 26th president, Theodore Roosevelt. Daniel, welcome to the program. All right, we are trying to get, we have a little bit of technical difficulty here. Ray, we talked at the top of the program about Theodore Roosevelt. I'm not even sure how many people remember Theodore Roosevelt, or perhaps it's a kind of a dim memory, because a lot of times we studied the presidents in grammar school, and maybe one class we had in U.S. history or American history in high school. But in a lot of places, they don't even teach that, or they teach very little. So we kind of lose our traditions. We lose our history when we fail to understand how we got here. And in this case, our presidents having been all men thus far, the men who helped shape our nation.
I was just thinking about it. I mean, most of us, what we know about Teddy Roosevelt is that he's on Mount Rushmore, right?
Right, that's right.
We're not sure what he did. We're not sure what he did to get up there. I mean, it's Washington, Lincoln, Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln. Those three we can identify. So what was it that Teddy Roosevelt did to get up on Mount Rushmore? And if you know a little bit more, you know that they're walk softly and carry a big stick, right? So, well, we got Daniel, so maybe he can help us out here.
All right, Daniel, we introduced you, and we had a little difficulty getting hooked up with you, so we gave you a really good introduction. I hope you were able to hear that. So, welcome to the program.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, listen, we were just talking about Theodore Roosevelt, and this is Ed Vitagliano. Ray Pritchard, the other co-host, was talking about the fact that, you know, Theodore Roosevelt's, you know, on Mount Rushmore, but probably 95%, maybe higher, of Americans will go, okay, Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, yeah, I kind of have some foggy idea about why they're up there. Theodore Roosevelt's up there. Who in the world is that guy?
Americans know who he is, I think. The problem is they have a distorted idea of who Teddy is. You know, he really is a fixture in terms of being a character in the American culture. You know, he's been in a lot of movies, for instance, the Night at the Museum movies. Robin Williams played him. And often he's depicted as sort of this eccentric, touched in the head, a little bit crazy, figure from the past. And what the American people don't realize is that he was really a great statesman, and that's why my book is called Theodore the Great, Conservative Crusader. That title wasn't made up by me. That title was actually a nickname that was very popular for Theodore Roosevelt when he was president of the United States. And a newspaper, the Baltimore Sun, did a survey when he was leaving office, and they asked the American people, what do you think Teddy's nickname will be 100 years from now? And many people said Theodore the Great. You know, he really achieved great things in office. He really changed the direction of the country and really put the United States on a trajectory to greatness. So, He was the founder. You might call him the founding father of the America's dominance of the 20th century. I mean, that's a good way to think about Teddy.
Daniel, one of the points that you are pushing back against in this book is the idea that Teddy Roosevelt was one of the original progressives. So, two parts to this. Number one, 110 years ago, what did that word progressive mean, and how has he come over the generations to be falsely labeled as a progressive?
Yeah, that's the main reason I wrote my book, really, as a response to the many criticisms or critics who've come out of the woodwork in the last decade or so attacking Teddy Roosevelt. You know, even though he is up on Mount Rushmore and he's revered by the country, there are these critics, especially on the right, and especially among libertarians. Glenn Beck, for instance, has been leading something of a jihad against Teddy Roosevelt with this very issue that you bring up, that Teddy was a progressive, quote-unquote. And that is a indisputable fact, because Teddy left the Republican Party in 1912, and he ran as a third-party candidate, leading the new Progressive Party that he helped form. The problem with that, though, is that this word progressive has a different meaning today than it did then. Today, the word is used by many liberals to disguise the fact that they're liberals, because the word liberal has a negative connotation, so they say, oh, I'm a progressive, and progressives today would be Barack Obama or Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi. The word today has really come to describe a political ideology of the left, whereas back then the word progressive meant someone who really wanted to listen to the American people, what the country at large was demanding in terms of reforms, and then implementing those reforms. So a good way of thinking about the difference between the two meanings is today a progressive wants to impose a view of the world in a top-down fashion on the country, whereas a progressive a century ago in 1912 wanted to listen to the public and then enact the reforms they wanted. So back then it wasn't an ideology the way it is today.
We're talking with Daniel Ruddy, who's author of the book we're discussing, Theodore the Great, Conservative Crusader. It's a book about the 26th President, Theodore Roosevelt. Daniel, the breakaway from the Republican Party has been one of the things that conservatives today, you mentioned Glenn Beck, whatever others might criticize Theodore Roosevelt, as being one of the things they say he did wrong. And then, to top it off, he ran under the progressive label. But as you explain in your book, you believe he's been unfairly vilified for splitting the Republican Party. Tell us a little bit about his presidential chops, Theodore Roosevelt, when he was president, and then how you take the run in 1912 under the Bull Moose Progressive Party.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the great misconceptions about Teddy. You know, even today, conservatives blame him for splitting up the Republican Party, but if you look at what actually happened, it really isn't true. As I said, in 1909, he left the presidency. And by the way, he was a very popular president, and there were no term limits at that time, so he could have had another term, another two. He probably could have remained in office many, many years because he was such a young man. But he voluntarily gave up power. It's one of his finest moments in his career. Especially because he was attacked as a tyrant and a dictator. You know, most tyrants and dictators don't voluntarily leave office right, the way he did. But getting to 1912, the misconception is that he broke up the party. Well, he went on a hunting trip to Africa and then toward Europe. So he was out of the United States for over a year. And during that time, his handpicked successor, William Howard Taft, reneged on some of his promises. It's a long, complicated story. We don't have time to go into it, but Taft really bungled his duties as president and broke his promise to. He was going to lower the protective tariff, which would have lowered consumer prices for American families. So the progressives in the party really revolted. It's a little similar to what, if you remember George W. H.W. Bush, the elder Bush.
Right.
If you remember, he broke his read my lips, no new taxes.
Yes,
pledge.
Right.
And that really helped Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton became president in 1992. It was a little bit like that. Taft broke his promise. And again, Teddy Roosevelt was out of the country. So by the time Teddy came back, the party was really split in two by then. And there was talk of this third party forming, the Progressive Party. And at that time, a senator from Wisconsin, Robert La Follette, was the leader of this movement. And Teddy saw the movement growing. And again, he really didn't have a part in it because he was out of the country. But he saw an opportunity. And there were some personal reasons. He had some personal problems with Taft, and it's a little complicated. But the main point, though, for your listeners, is that he did not split the party. Taft did, because Taft was an inept politician.
We're talking with Daniel Ruddy. He's the author of Theodore the Great, Conservative Crusader, A New Look at President Theodore Roosevelt. Got to ask you this question, since we're in the middle of a heated presidential campaign. Do you see any commonalities between Teddy Roosevelt's approach to governance and Donald Trump, say?
Oh, for sure. There's a lot of similarities between Trump and Teddy Roosevelt. For one thing, they're both brash New Yorkers, very outspoken. Both Trump and Teddy Roosevelt were geniuses at self-promotion. You know, Teddy really had a flair for controversy, and he loved to get into public quarrels and then use those quarrels as the means to, you know, increase his own brand recognition with the American people. Teddy was a great nationalist, wanted to flex the muscles of the country and demonstrate the strength of the United States. So Trump and Teddy are both similar in that regard. Both are populists, as I was describing before. You know, they're really tapping into the grassroots anger of the country at large. In 1912, Teddy ran against what he called the invisible government. That was a phrase he coined to describe the entrenched power of party bosses and corporate lobbyists and just the corrupt, rigged political system at that time. And it's unfortunate, but Trump is running basically against that same power structure today, over a century later. It's still in place, and it's still thriving. It's really sad that that's the case. There are differences between the two men, though. Teddy was really well prepared. I mean, he was one of the most brilliant men ever to become president. He read a book a day. He wrote 20 books in his life. He's just a brilliant intellectual, had a profound and deep understanding of public affairs and history. And so in that sense, you know, Trump and he are not, you know, it could really very, very different.
Daniel, we've got about a minute and a half left. So let me just throw a, this might be a little unfair, but let me just throw you a quick question, really. In the age of the internet and 24/7, you know, news bashing, really, of candidates of every stripe, do you think it's possible for us to have a kind of the mythical hero like Teddy Roosevelt was when people are constantly spending time harping on this flaw or that flaw? Do you think it's possible we'll ever have that kind of an individual lead the country again?
I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, back then, before technology, before the television, radio, the internet, you know, Teddy read a book a day. As I said, he was a brilliant man. He was, you know, people just don't acquire that kind of knowledge today because they're so busy. The technology almost hampers the ability of individuals to learn the way he did. In terms of the pointing out flaws, though, you know, there was an active, very active media at that time. It was just in terms of news. It was run by newspapers like the famous Yellow Press of William right. Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer. So they were very active in pointing out Teddy's flaws. You know, Teddy was constantly attacked for his physical appearance, his teeth. But he turned that to his advantage. You know, his flaws and his high, squeaky voice, these things became part of his persona, you know, in the same way that Trump has that very distinctive hair. You know, the flaw becomes a feature that cartoonists can then use.
Hey, Daniel, I'm sorry.
To accentuate who this person was.
I'm sorry. Daniel, we are out of time. I'm sorry to I kind of tossed you a complicated question there at the end. I apologize for that. Daniel Ruddy has been our guest. He's author of the book Theodore the Great, Conservative Crusader. It is about the president, 26th President Theodore Roosevelt. Daniel, thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you for doing this. A great book in on behalf of a great
Hello.
President. Thank you, Daniel. All right, I think we kind of lost Daniel there, folks. Anyway, this is Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman, along with Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. We're going to take a five-minute break, and when we come back, our very own Alex McFarland will be in studio. We'll be talking about you name it. You'll want to hear it. Please join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.